Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we do get into a conversation around some of the new IT governance laws that are going to be coming into place, later this year. Some of the risks and challenges that are posed by the new legislation, more on implementation as opposed to, risks to businesses themselves, because some of this legislation is trying to protect businesses in a bigger way, particularly, around the fact that, so many businesses, particularly in places like, financial services, are using so much technology and so many third-party pieces of software. But how do you make sure that your platform provider, your service provider, your software vendor is, got a platform that meets, the required that's got the minimum requirements according to the law, just so that from a FSCA point of view, you've got those protections and guidelines in place. We all know that financial services is highly regulated, and this is just another piece of that. So to give us a sense of what's going on, we are joined by Guy Kricher, who is executive risk consultant over at Escrow Shaw. And he's just going to be giving us a little bit of insight into that world and what's going on. Guy, greetings to you today.
Greetings, Madiwa. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, before we go too far, Escrow Shaw, as a company, maybe you can just give us a little bit of insight, on that front. What is it that you guys do, just so that people understand, your context and your interest when it comes to this particular matter?
Escrow Shaw has been providing software escrow services for almost 20 years in South Africa now. It was a business that originated in Europe, and our founder brought it here to South Africa and has since been operating, providing software escrow services, protecting business continuity of South Africa's top blue chip corporates and financial services companies for, as I say, 20 years. We are the SA's number one software escrow service, and so we try to stay at the cutting edge of regulation and what is required in terms of business continuity. And also now we find ourselves falling into the cyber risk environment as well, just because that seems to be part of the big threats to business continuity.
Now, Guy, it is in the company's name, Escrow Shaw, that word escrow. And I do need to ask, what we mean by escrow services when it comes to software. In a business context, we normally think of escrow as it pertains to certain types of transactions, where money has to be held with a third party before a deal is concluded, on the other side. I know that places like real estate make use of that type of thing. But when it comes to software, what do we mean by escrow services and software?
Excellent. Thank you for asking that question in that way, because actually the word escrow applies to various different environments, and it simply means something is held in trust until such time as certain other requirements are met, and then that thing that is held in trust is released. So in our context, we hold source code, technical documentation, and in the context of cloud-hosted software, we hold certain cloud access details in trust on behalf of both the software supplier and the software consumer, end user, the corporate business relying upon that software. And those things are held in trust subject to a three-party agreement, which states the various circumstances under which we would be obliged to release to the end user in the event that, for example, the supplier had gone out of business, fallen below their required service delivery requirements, been bought out perhaps by a competitor, been liquidated, any of those kinds of things. We call them release conditions. Once they have been met, then we would be obliged to release those details to the end user in order to ensure that the end user is able to use those details to keep their business from being interrupted.
Okay. I think that gives us a little bit of insight into, you know, what that means. Very interesting, business model, but I think it probably bodes well for some of these sectors that are very sensitive, to actually have that type of service in place that can vet, some of these things going forward. And with the little technical knowledge I have in my head, I could also see a big use case for it in the sense that there's been a big push around open source software, over the years. And, it's probably good to have some of that vetted before it gets, used in a sensitive business application or sensitive business operation.
It's very interesting that you mention open source, because many of our developers make use of various degrees of open source, and often they will push back on us and say, well, we don't need to deposit that with you, it's open source. And our counter to that is always, well, we don't know whether that open source material will be accessible in 5 years' time, 3 years' time, 7 years' time. So please go and get it and make it part of the source code deposit so that it will definitely be available to the corporate end user in the event that something happens.
Okay, cool. So we've gone in quite a bit, on the escrow, piece, but you and I are here to talk about some of these new regulations that are going to be coming into place because some of the financial services companies have until the 15th of November 2024 to comply with requirements under the new joint standard for IT governance and risk management that was issued by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, or FSCA, and the Prudential Authority. And this is an amendment to the Financial Sector Regulation Act of 2017, aiming to update the minimum requirements for IT governance and risk management that financial institutions must meet. Now, when I was doing my research for this, one of the things that I found is that as Escrow Show, you guys have sort of warned or hinted at the fact that a lot of companies will not necessarily be able to meet these requirements, from that start date that these new regulations come into effect. How bad is that for the sector, if at all?
Well, Madiwa, it's hard to tell exactly where everyone is. I think that our banking and financial services environment is very, very organized. And so it may be that there are other corporates beyond and outside financial services. And when I say financial services, I include insurance companies in that description. I think they are very much working hand in glove with the FSCA and the Prudential Authority to deliver everything that they need. But one thing that we will find when we look at the regulations is that very little is peremptory. It is all guided towards best practice, which is kind of subjective, right? So the regulators are looking for the financial services companies to up their game in terms of best practice. But I think there will be degrees of compliance, and I'm not sure, I don't think anybody's quite sure where the regulator will draw the line of, yes, this is adequate compliance and this is not. But the ultimate sort of goal for the whole environment is to protect companies from business interruption and, of obviously, consumers like ourselves from significant interruptions. We've seen various banking institutions have their banking apps go dark for sometimes days at a time. And so that's what the regulator is trying to prevent and protect, because, of course, that costs both the company and the economy money, and it creates very unhappy consumers.
One of the things that I'm quite curious to understand from you, Guy, is on a practical level, these new regulations come into effect, let's say, on the 15th of November, like what we're saying. And there's, I'm going to call it a grace period that's been given, you know, for some of the software providers to actually, you know, meet these requirements. From that date, that start date, is it possible that we might start to see some, I'm trying to find a good word, some thinking around the financial institutions, maybe, I won't say blacklisting, but choosing not to deal with companies that don't, meet, some of these regulations, just so that, you know, they know that they're protecting themselves and they're ticking all the boxes and, you know, they have everything going forward. Because as a software provider, maybe as an IT company or someone, a software vendor, that's the thing that I'm immediately thinking about.
It's a very, very good point. And I think we're going to see this manifest in the selection process, where end users are choosing between various software vendors. And I think because it is the end user who suffers the wrath of the Financial Sector Conduct Authority or the Prudential Authority if something goes wrong. And so they've got to look back up their supply chain and ensure that their vendors are sufficiently protected, so that they themselves are sufficiently protected. And so where vendors take steps in advance to protect their clients' business continuity, that puts them in an advantage when pitching for business. I think we've seen certain vendors where they're small, perhaps outside of the country, perhaps new to the marketplace, and they haven't taken care to establish things like software escrow arrangements in advance of their negotiations with their prospective clients. That puts them at a disadvantage when negotiating the final deal to become the supplier for one of our financial institutions.
And when it comes to how, I guess, players in the sector are going to be engaging with something like this, specifically for the software guys, what are the hurdles to actually make themselves compliant, right? Is it a re-engineering of the software? Is it better processing in terms of their quality control? Like, what is it that you as escrow show are looking at to say, actually, we don't think that a lot of people will be able to, you know, have met, the requirements by November 15?
Well, there are a number of hurdles, one of which would be, for example, compliance with ISO regulations. And overseas, there's a kind of limited version of ISO where they call, which is called SOC. So end users are looking for suppliers that are compliant, certified. We've seen some players in the market who say we are compliant. That's not the same as being certified. Certified means you've actually gone through the process, been audited, and received an ISO certificate. So there's that, and then there's. You know, it's quite hard to generalize, but all kinds of resilience issues, answering the questions, what if this happened? What if that happened? What if your power supply at your data center failed? Is there an alternative? Is there a backup? What if you were breached? Where are you holding your code? Is there a backup code held in a completely separate area where the cyber hackers cannot reach? We recently talked to a software supplier client who were hacked, and they thought, well, it's okay because we've got our backup code in this other area. And before they were able to reach their backup code, the cyber hackers had managed to find a way to encrypt that code as well. And so they were left entirely with no backup code, and primarily because they didn't have an escrow arrangement holding their code offsite, they were stuck. And eventually they had to rebuild their entire environment from an ancient disk they found on the bottom of drawer, which they were able to do, but it cost them some big clients.
Yeah, that sounds like quite a tough situation to find to find yourself in. Is there a situation where we're going to be seeing, because the problem with software, and especially for companies and systems, is that substitution is very hard, because you sort of have to change how an entire maybe core function department or something actually operates. So it's not an easy thing to say, okay, fine, we as a bank or we as an insurer are just going to switch out, you know, this piece of software. So for financial institutions that may feel that they're under pressure, you know, because you did say that the wrath comes down to the end user from the FSCA. For someone who is looking at that and saying, I do not want, you know, the wrath of the regulator on me, how do they then help themselves in that situation? How do they mitigate?
Yes.
Do we see parallel structures coming into play of some sort?
That is sometimes the case. But it's a very expensive solution to establish a parallel environment in case of failover. But depending on the business criticality of the particular application that we're dealing with, that can sometimes be required. However, the point of escrow is to buy time in the event that something happens to the supplier. So if you have access to the code in an on-premise environment, that buys you time to keep that application going until such time as you're able to sunset it and find a new supplier. In the context of a hosted environment, we find that the biggest risk is where suppliers are paying for the cloud hosting service. And so if the supplier becomes financially constrained, the first thing they do is stop paying for the cloud hosting. So we step in those situations, and we cover that cloud hosting bill in order to ensure that the end user's lights stay on, to buy them time to be able to resolve the situation in other ways. So escrow is not a final solution necessarily. It just buys time under the circumstances where you need to engineer a stressed exit from that environment.
And because of everything that's going on, you know, there's a lot of regulation, like what we said, and at the same time, there's a lot of regulation, and at the same time, you have a lot of competing interests trying to make sure that, you know, things are together. From a regulator point of view and the guidelines that have been given so far, maybe you could outline for us, you know, We keep talking about November 15, but like we said, there is a bit of a grace period. How long is this grace period, and when do we expect that the regulator will start actually policing, you know, these regulations?
It's quite hard to say, Madiwa, because we don't have a lot to go on in terms of historical precedent. However, it was intriguing to me just 2 weeks ago, the regulator made a statement about enforcing the POPI Act, and less than a week later, somebody received a massive fine for unsolicited kind of cold calling. And so it was intriguing to me that they were that active. You know, so I think our financial regulators are very, very much on the ball, and are wanting to ensure that we stay competitive with what we're seeing in the global financial service sector. And so that's really, you know, that's where all these new regulations have come from. We saw the European Union establish the Digital Operational Resilience Act colloquially named DORA. We saw in the USA something similar. The UK produced the Prudential Regulation Authority, all of which require third-party arrangements and to be evaluated and carefully considered. And in some cases, escrow is encouraged. Only in two jurisdictions have we seen escrow absolutely required. In India and Singapore, they've just said all third-party applications must be protected with an escrow arrangement. And that's fascinating to me. Our own financial services sector or financial sector conduct authority has not gone that far. They've said we must we ought to follow best practice, of which escrow is a part, but there are other parts. So it's establishing your IT strategy, establishing your documented risk management. How are you handling sensitive and confidential information? How are you scoring your risks associated with financial products and services? What are your continuity arrangements? What are your stressed exit plans? And when last did you test them? So those are that. It's much wider than escrow. Escrow is a part of that world, but the regulations really are speaking to general areas of mitigation in order to protect business continuity for all our financial services.
When you are a service, when you are a software provider, sorry, you have a lot of competing interests, right? You're trying to make sure that your systems or your platform, you know, can withstand whatever system demands are there, number of users, you know, permissions, the security aspect, you know, just making sure that all the different components are talking to each other, cloud, on-premises, all of that stuff is all happening. At the same time, you're trying to make sure that your system is current, that, you know, you're keeping yourself you're keeping yourself together in terms of the latest technologies, the latest trends and all that, all at the same time trying to make sure that your GRC or your governance risk and compliance is, you know, where it needs to be. As far as you can see, for a software provider in this environment where they're doing, where they have to deal with all of this stuff, how important is November 15 to them? You know, yeah.
I would say where you are already embedded with your clients, you are going to, as a software provider, you are going to want to cooperate as much as you can with your large corporate clients or financial services clients in order to assist them to satisfy the regulator. But ultimately, the buck stops with the client. The buck stops with the banking institution or the insurance institution. And so we come alongside them and assist with applying a little bit of pressure upon the developers to ensure all the deposits with us are up to date, secure, verified, so that they can provide our certification to the regulator and say, we've done our due diligence here. This is part of our stressed exit plan. This is part of our business continuity plan, along with all the other mitigation measures that we have in place. This is how it works. And so I think we're going to see software suppliers cooperating as much as possible, but the ultimate responsibility lies with the financial sector.
All right. Now, before we let you go, Guy, anything else that you possibly want to highlight? And at the same time, you know, the promulgation of something like this, in terms of outlook, you know, what other developments do you sort of see it leading to, you know, in this marriage between the regulation and the development of the technology?
I think what we're seeing, Madiwa, is a little bit of a migration away from tech startups to very established software suppliers. I think some of the very large financial services are reticent to deal with small suppliers simply for these reasons, that they represent risk. And so where possible, they would prefer to deal with almost internationally recognized service suppliers. And unfortunately, this has a cost effect. So it's much more expensive to deal with larger companies who are perhaps perceived to be too big to fail. But just on that note, it almost seems like a false economy to me, simply because just last week we saw Microsoft in South Africa go dark. And so who is too big to fail? Now, I'm not suggesting any level of business continuity or disaster recovery service could have fixed that problem. It turned out to be an undersea cable issue. All I mean is that no one is immune from business continuity issues, and we have to put our best efforts into mitigating as much of the risk as possible and trusting that we've done enough after that. So I do think that some of the smaller companies are able to mitigate those risks, but there's a perception among some sectors that big is better, and there's a mild migration towards bigger suppliers in order to, as part of that risk mitigation measure.
All right. So it has been a really great discussion just talking to Guy about, some of these new requirements that are going to be coming in, over the next coming months. November 15 is the date that we kept talking about. We said that, the joint standard puts the onus on the governing bodies of financial institutions to ensure compliance, of some of these new IT governance and risk management regulations that are going to be coming in. Some of the big points that we spoke about is the fact that we do find ourselves in a situation where technology is constantly developing, and that requires a regulator such as the FACA to make sure that that the software that is core to a lot of how the sector is running, is compliant with certain minimum requirements, just so that we can at least protect, customer data and, protect some of the sensitive, operations. Because at the end of the day, we are dealing with money, that belongs to people. At the heart of what we're talking about people's money, and the regulator needs to take all steps to ensure that the technology that's being used doesn't endanger that money in any way. Big thing as well that Guy was talking about is the fact that going forward, we might find ourselves in a situation where there will be pressure, on some of the software providers, especially if you are embedded or entrenched in a particular company, to at least make sure that that they meet the requirements. I like the fact that he did explain that there's a difference between being compliant and having and being certified. He did make a big distinction between that, and he said some of those distinctions will be very important going forward, especially as some of the financial institutions who have a lot of regulatory burden on themselves, just to try to make sure that they don't meet the ire of that regulator. Also, just talking about the fact that if you are a software provider, there's huge interest in actually making sure that you meet the requirements. Firstly, because going forward, those will likely be some of the things that will be considered in the tendering or contracting process. Are you meeting some of these requirements? Are you not? And then also at the same time, just making sure that also one of the things that might push out some of the smaller players, because there is that perception that some of the bigger players tend to have their ducks in a row, or their eyes dotted, T's crossed when it comes to some of these things. So let's see how it goes, and it's always been great. We were in conversation with Guy Krecher, who is an executive risk consultant over at Escrow Shore. Guy, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was such a pleasure. Thanks so much for chatting to me.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.